Hey, long time no see, Jesse Simonton. Man, I've been enjoying you and John Reed chopping it up every week, so I had to get in on the action. How you been, man?
Doing well. Yeah, John and I got a little Slow Mesh Action podcast, and then I'm, rocking the Surrender Cobra, so got that newsletter on Substack, so come subscribe. Yeah, it's been fun. I've been following you. You and Shane are still kicking it, doing your fun bits, dancing away, and trolling SEC fans and Big Ten fans alike. So it's been fun, following you guys as always.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. And, there's no better time, I think, in college football.
November's the best.
But for me, it's because it's all the guys I've been bagging on for a year, they all got fired. So I'm feeling good.
Except
about
your boy Sammy, right? I mean, like, you guys had to pour one out for old Pittman.
Yeah, that we did not really celebrate that one, but I think that's probably better for Arkansas in the long term. But I got to say, Jesse, I've never been used as this is going to be a weird roundabout here, but for, I believe you criticized Hugh Freeze, and then Auburn people defended him, and then other Auburn people said, look at this tool bag defending Hugh Freeze, but you were the original. So what is it like being in that rabbit hole of Hugh Freezery?
Yeah, I mean, my relationship to just Auburn hiring Hugh in general has been kind of funny. I can say this now because I'm not working there, but like I wrote a column at On3 the day he got hired that ended up kind of getting buried because we didn't want to piss off, the Auburn brass. And that's just, that's inside baseball stuff. That's kind of how it works. But it just, I was skeptical on day one. I think the game has, much like a Jimbo Fisher, I think the game had kind of passed Hugh by. It's a different reality. And the irony that he beat Alabama twice, and one of them you needed like the bounce off the helmet, the miracle, and Alabama starts the wrong quarterback in that game to pick up one of those wins. The fact that that win gave him so much equity to get the Auburn job, I just think didn't carry merit. And then look at it. Look at how it turned out. I mean, like, just because you could beat that one team a couple times, okay, it's probably way the hell more important that you can beat most of all the other teams all the time. And he couldn't do that, at all. And so the fact that he had a roster that I think you and I would both agree is probably top five in the SEC this year, just on a talent basis. But they have the glaring hole at quarterback. He never got that right at Auburn. And I think, again, like I think much like Jimbo's offense, I think folks had just caught up to it. And so you can kind of putt your way, past these teams when you're playing Liberty or when you're at Liberty. But it's a different ballgame when you're in the SEC. So to then be in that swirl where I got criticized for then being skeptical about Auburn as dating back to when he got hired to then the tweet that you're alleging was when two of the beat writers kind of came at me because I, said that, this was a problem last year when Hugh was making these statements about, backing Peyton Thorne. And we saw how that turned out. And then in 2025, he's out here being like, well, I think if we make a bowl game, that'll be good. And Auburn fans get so pissed, he suddenly has to talk about making the playoffs once he goes to SEC Media Day. So the Hugh Freeze era will not be fondly remembered on the plains, that's for sure.
Right. So I can easily assume your answer to this, but how big of a mistake, if a mistake at all, would it be to give the job to DJ Durkin if he simply wins the Iron Bowl?
Oh, I tweeted that on – now, what's funny is because, again, the Auburn fans and the Auburn folks, Crane and some of the other, they're good guys, but those guys on Twitter, they were going through the full 360, they went full 360 on Saturday where they were praising DJ Durkin at halftime, and come the end of the game, they're like, get rid of everybody. I would not hire DJ Durkin as my head coach. I think there are a slew of reasons for that, notwithstanding what kind of materialized at Maryland, even if he has been somewhat forgiven for that. I just don't think if you're a job like Auburn, you're settling for a guy like DJ Durkin. If you hire DJ Durkin when a guy like John Sumrall is out there, who we don't know if John Sumrall is going to be a good coach, he could turn out to be the next Billy Napier for all we know. But I'd be interested to see what's in his blueprint, what's in that blue, you know, that blue binder that Billy was so, you know, fond of when he was in Louisiana. I think Summerall has some plans too. And so I would check out a John Summerall. I would see if an Eli Drinkwitz would be interested to come down. I'd give Alex Golish a call. I think all of those guys, obviously Eli's much more accomplished, but I think all those guys have infinitely more upside than a DJ Durkin, who was, you know, an okay coach at Maryland.
Right. And, well, you mentioned Napier, so I got to ask you, what do you think happens there with Lane Kiffin in Florida? And he's come out this week. Well, you know, it's Florida week, so I guess it's fair game to finally ask him about this stuff. But, you know, what do you look for in a job?
You know, another thing I'm curious about is, what are the aspects that make up a good job for a college head coach? What's the top of your priority list?
I wasn't ready for that one. I think that's evolved and changed, and there's different things in it. I've said to you guys a couple years ago, I think, and this was before Cap, but I said, I think that it's going to move to, people used to say, okay, you know, when people wanted to hire you or something and interview and what questions do you have? What are your concerns? Okay. People used to say, you know, facilities, how many practice fields, you know, those things. And I said, I don't think, you know, I think that's changed. It's going to change. And it's going to be, how much NIL do you have? You know, when it was all collective, you know, how is your collective? How's it run? How much do you have? Because that's before this, that was the salary cap, meaning that's how much money you're going to have. And I know some people sometimes think, well, okay, that's not a big deal, but just look at professional sports when it's not the same, like baseball and the payrolls and over time, who wins and who doesn't win. And somebody may have a year, outlier years once in a while, but, and so now that's a little equaled out, but there's still, how much are you giving to Rev, you know, to your football program? And then how much do you have collective wise, you know, I think it's a big question, but, you know, people will talk about it's narrowed, like I heard Coach Saban say, and some stuff has narrowed, as I referred to, because you can't stockpile, you know, at those, whatever blue bloods you want to call it or refer to it. But there's still things there that you're still going to struggle to beat those guys, because kids are still recruited and they see size of stadiums and tradition and Heismans and national championships and then your location, you know, to talent. So I think all those are in there, but it's slid a little time over, you know. I think when that question probably early was that, what is your assistant coach's pool? Now is, what is your player pool?
It depends on who's listening to the clip. All Ole Miss people say, well, the hell, he loves Ole Miss. I listen to it. It sounds like he's headed to Florida. What do you make of this whole saga? And It's so convoluted because we got the playoff and we got a timeline, we got a portal. What do you make of all of it?
Well, have you seen the latest betting odds there, Mike? Have you seen that? Because a lot of Gator fans are holding their hopes that Vegas already knows something that no one else knows. I'm going to tell you this. This was hilarious. The week that Billy got fired, because I'm in Florida, I'm in Gainesville, back in Gainesville. I was at the gym and some folks know what I do and they came up to me and they were asking me questions and they go, I swear to God, Mike, they go, I don't know if you heard, but Lane came and visited the facilities last week. He did it underground, you know, in the shade of darkness. And that's the sort of stuff we're dealing with right now. Just the most ridiculous. People have no idea how these coaching searches actually work. The fact that Florida is going to have a search or has a search firm, you know, Scott Strickland is part of the process. There's no doubt that Lane Kiffin is target 1A, B, and C. You know, I think Florida fans are going to, you know, you shouted out John Reed. Florida fans may pull a John Reed and try to do a Shiano sacking 2.0 or a 3.0, because I guess we actually saw Texas A&M do it to Mark Stoops. So this will be the trilogy. We had Lord of the Rings 1 at Tennessee. We had Lord of the Rings 2 at Texas A&M. If they don't hire Lane Kiffin, I think we may see, you know, the return of the king, unless it is a la Urban Meyer coming back. I mean, like, they want Kiffin. They've made it very clear. I do think if I was a betting man, the odds seem to be that if Kiffin ever is going to leave Ole Miss, I do believe it would be for Florida and not LSU. That's based on some a little intel and a lot of gut. You know, that's how I would put that. But I wrote a column a couple weeks ago at my Substack, kind of just on the point that, look, Lane's winning either way. He can say it's not about the money, but the man's about to become maybe the first $14 million coach, because he's definitely going to have Ole Miss and Florida battling for him. Probably LSU is going to be interested too, one would presume. So he's going to get a huge bag. I think it's just a question of where does he feel most comfortable. Nothing. Florida can't. I don't know if maybe you agree or disagree, Mike. I don't think Florida can offer him one more thing that Ole Miss can't in 2025. You said that in 2015, you'd be laughed off this podcast, and that would be fair. 10 years later, the sport's changed. He can win a national championship at Ole Miss. He is proving that this season. He can win a national championship at Florida. Florida can't offer him anything better than that. You know, they can maybe say, "Hey, the weather's a little bit warmer, and we might got a few more athletes in this state, obviously, in terms of prep recruiting." But that's not something that Lane is particularly interested in the first place. So I think it's just a term of comfortability. How comfortable is he at Ole Miss? And I guess how much, you know, we saw it in the Georgia game. We've seen it multiple times. I think he's taken this like Steve Spurrier cosplay thing a little too on the nose, you know, with the rotating the quarterbacks and some of the fourth down decisions and that kind of stuff. If he really wants to be, you know, 2025 Spurrier, then maybe that's what kind of is kind of the deciding chip in the middle of the table.
Mm-hmm. And then potentially looming over this whole thing is LSU job is open, of course, but has it been diminished at all in your mind, given the fact that we got the governor out here making wild statements? He has inserted what I have been told as or described as a puppet president, puppet AD. I mean, it's the governor that's running the show down there, and he controls the board. It's pretty convoluted down there. But do you think LSU job is at all diminished? Because I think normally, without all this nonsense, I think they could get just about anybody they want, and I don't know that that's necessarily the case right now.
Well, you hit it on the head right there with that. It's this convoluted mess where the governor is in charge of the entire board, so he can basically play Donald Trump, you know, fire or no fire. Back in the old days, you know, where he's sitting at the desk board, and he just starts firing everybody if he doesn't like what they're doing. So somebody's got to wrangle those. You know, this is the Bayou Bengals. Somebody's got to wrangle the cats there. And who's going to be the one to do that? And I think if there's a bunch of stray cats in terms of power brokers here, boosters there, the governor's over here, you got the former LSU players who are a very, you know, boastful bunch. They're kind of like the modern Miami guys. You know, Tyrann Mathieu's out here saying that he wants to be considered for the head coach. You know, that's something Michael Irvin would have done at Miami, you know, 15 years ago. So it's just who's going to wrangle all these cats, and can you get these stray cats all, you know, aligned? And because of that, there's no doubt that that's going to scare off some people. I mean, again, like Lane Kiffin, as I think LSU is a top five job in this, you know, in a vacuum in this sport, but with everything going on, do you just say, "Hey, I'd rather stick in Oxford, or I'll go, you know, take it to the Sunshine State and see what I could do at Florida"? I think it also is a complicated deal, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it. There's not a lot of just obvious candidates for these jobs. I do not subscribe or buy into the fact that there's not enough quality coaching candidates across the board. I don't buy into that fact. I think that you know, the Kurt Cignettis and that kind of stuff, you just got to go looking in some unique places. Who's to say that, you know, Chesney at JMU wouldn't be an awesome coach if Penn State, you know, what ended up hiring him? But that's like beneath Penn State. You know, they don't want to go hire the JMU coach. And so that guy's not going to get the chance that he otherwise could be afforded to. But I don't know that there is the no brainer. Everyone thought Brian Kelly, even with all his family and all this kind of garbage stuff that he, you know, spoke into existence the day he got the LSU job, most people thought that was a coup. They thought, you know, I mean, Ed O, Gumbo, you know, big LSU brain, he'd kind of worn out his welcome. Let's go get a real football coach who's won a bunch of games at Notre Dame and then give him everything. People thought that was going to be a home run hire. Has not worked. Lincoln Riley at USC, home run hire. Has not worked. You can go down that 2021 cycle. Really, other than Dan Lanning and Marcus Freeman, Mario Cristobal, TBD, but I think, you know, I think the Chris DeFraud nickname, you know, exists for a reason. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know where LSU turns if it's not a Kiffin, because there's not the, you know, Marcus Freeman's not going to leave Notre Dame. You're not obviously going to get Kirby, Lanning, or Ryan Day. And so then whoever you get, it's a risk.
Well, how about one last coaching thing, and then we can move on to actual games. But thoughts on Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri, who, you know, again, 5-10 years ago, Penn State, Florida, Auburn, LSU, whatever. If they offer him, he's gone immediately. But maybe not in today's age. But do you think there's a...
See, I kind of think he's in a unique situation, Mike, where you're not wrong. You're not wrong if you squint. But I think if you really kind of do like the big bulging eyes and kind of open them up, it's not beat the posse out of town, but it's like, let's go ahead and maybe, because it's not beat the posse out of town or restart the clock, because he's obviously not in any danger at Missouri. They love him. They've given him everything. The state, you know, was at the forefront of the NIL changing the laws and the rules so that it could really behoove and benefit the Missouri Tigers. And he's taking advantage of that. I just think, is he hitting his head on that ceiling where it's like, let's go somewhere else where I can do a little bit better. I can have a little bit more. Now, in terms of what you're saying, I will play devil's advocate even on myself that the way this season looks like it might unravel for him. Bo gets hurt. You know, the offensive line's not really that good. They got some really nice pieces on defense, and obviously Ahmad Hardy is hell on wheels to tackle. But if they end up losing, you know, four or five games, you know, because they really slipped down the stretch, no one's going to hold his feet to the fire at Missouri. He does that at Auburn, and, you know, suddenly you're a year away from maybe being a year away. And so that's, I guess, the decision he's going to have to make if one of those schools comes calling.
Yeah, and I just don't know if he sits around and thinks like this, but it just seems like Missouri had a window here with the schedule, with the talent.
That's what I'm saying,
NIL,
too.
And they just missed it, just barely, but still.
And he, you know what? And he's a guy that I think he would fit well at Florida. I really do. I think he's got a lot of Spurrier in him too, you know, with his shit talking and, you know, rocking the visor, and he does have a nice offense and that kind of, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's an open secret that when it looked like Billy was going to get fired a year ago before the Ole Miss and LSU games, that, you know, some of, I think, Drink's representatives behind the scenes were maybe kicking some tires on at least, you know, being interested in an opening in Gainesville.
Right.
Now there is one. So we'll see what happens.
Well, speaking of a fit, I think thus far it's obvious the perfect fit's been Mike Elko down in College Station. And it wasn't that long ago, Jesse. It was about a year ago where some people were ready to run Colin Klein out of here. And, you know, is Marcel Reed, does he have it? And then, what do you know, insert some weapons. They are unstoppable, seemingly, most Saturdays than not, and then combined with Elko's defense, they legitimately look like they could win the national championship to me. What's your thoughts on A&M?
That's a special team, man. That's a special team. And, I know your boy Billy Lucci has been puffing his chest all season because this is the Texas 8-4 jokes. I think they're dead. You know, they're 9-0. First time in the regular season, Jimbo Fisher didn't even win 9 regular season games, you know, in a single year. Elko is just a remarkable coach. You know, the culture stuff gets overblown. But he is both a, you know, I think really savvy messenger and also just obviously a brilliant tactician. You know, it's been funny. I don't know if you've kind of thought about this or pointed it out on one of your bazillion shows that you guys do, but it's funny that, you know, Steve Sarkisian, and some of these coaches, Billy Napier, Steve Sarkisian, these coaches right now that have been criticized this season, offensive coaches calling plays, and, you know, that their hands are, you know, they got too many hands in the cookie jar. They're not, you know, doing enough of their other responsibilities because they're having to worry so much about game planning and play calling on Saturdays. Well, you know who that hadn't been a problem for is Mike Elko, who's who's calling Texas A&M's defense and has just awesome red zone defense, this awesome third down defense. And I think he, you mentioned Colin Klein, you know, Colin Klein's probably got to be up for the Broyles Award. I mean, he's got to be one of the best assistants. It would not surprise me at all if he ends up getting a job like Oklahoma State or Colorado State or something like that. He's been that good. I still am a little skeptical about Marcel Reed's ability to hold up maybe in like a long playoff run. I just think he's so frail. But we'll see. I mean, if that's your biggest concern, if everybody loses their starting quarterback, Georgia saw it a year ago, your season's probably over. Like, you know, I mean, that me raising that concern, I should say, is for pretty much every team in America, if you lose, you know, QB1, you're probably screwed. So they got a super deep tailback rotation. I think they're going to get Le'Veon Moss back here either in a week or two. That game against Texas at the end of the season is going to be huge. I think they have a real shot at 11-1 or 12-0, considering it's South Carolina and then a slappy before Texas. So what Elko's done is remarkable. And I think he'd be silly to, I know he's a New Jersey guy and all that, and his name's been tossed around for Penn State. But man, those oil barons in Texas, they'll give you what you want if you're winning. And he could be like the Monopoly, you know, Mr. Moneybags, man, if he delivers Texas A&M an SEC championship.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Texas there. So let's get into their trip to Georgia this weekend. What a showdown this could be. I don't think it's a playoff eliminator because I think Texas will still potentially have a shot if they can beat particularly an undefeated A&M. I think that would give them a boost. And Georgia, I don't think it's getting eliminated, certainly with a loss. But still, a lot on the line. And wouldn't you know it, Jesse, after all the Arch Manning jokes, and we went from he's the greatest to he can't play to now looks like he could play again.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I wrote about this about a week ago, I guess. I can't remember, something like that. We still can't have like an honest conversation about Arch Manning because he's Arch Manning. You know, again, like if he was, you know, Johnny Smith, it would be a totally different deal. But because he's Arch Manning and that surname carries all that it does, it's unfortunate. Because the honest truth is, he is playing a lot better. He is playing a lot better. The other honest truth is, he's playing a lot better because Steve Sarkisian's completely changed the offense and they're not throwing the ball down the field anymore. So he kind of is like Arch Mac Jones Manning. He's like Mac Jones at the 49ers. You know, the ball's only going about 5-7 yards, you know. But you know what? Mac Jones looks a lot better than he did when he was with the New England Patriots. And Arch Manning looks a lot better than he did a month ago when he was the starting quarterback for Texas. So it's not to say you can't develop. It's not to say you can't get better. He's going to obviously have a stiff test this weekend in Athens on the road. You know, Texas is – they got down at Mississippi State. They played terrible against Kentucky. They have not been a particularly good road team this year. Obviously, they had the, you know, season opening loss where they certainly acquitted themselves and were competitive against Ohio State. You know, one score loss. There's nothing to write, you know, shake your head about that. But being on the road has been a little bit of a struggle. So I still love what that defense has to offer. You know, Simmons, Anthony Hill Jr., those guys. I mean, they can be hell on wheels. But Georgia, Mike, you know, for all the folks always wanting to fire Mike Bobo, he seems to certainly figured some stuff out. And, you know, Georgia fans will still bitch every Saturday about the screens that they're running there. And yet you just see Zachariah Branch take another screen for a touchdown. I mean, it's like how many times you got to say, I think they kind of know what they're doing. So that tailback tandem that they have with Nate Frazier and Bowens, it looks like running behind that you know, that offensive line is super young. And that's the thing that's scary about this Georgia team is how young it is. There's a lot of young players playing on both sides of the ball. And you know, so there's a lot that's going to be, I'm looking forward to that game a lot this weekend. I'm also looking forward to, you know, Alabama, Oklahoma, you know, how much gas in the tank that do the Tide still have?
Yeah, and again, the way they're playing Alabama, certainly they look like a lock for the playoff, but you lose this one, then all of a sudden I think you go on the road to the Iron Bowl, and now you're fighting for your playoff lives. But You know, we don't have to look that far ahead, but just this matchup against Oklahoma, I mean, Alabama can't run the football, at least here lately, and it's not going to get any easier. I think, I think it's going to get more difficult against this Oklahoma front.
The saving grace for Alabama this weekend is that Oklahoma continues to I don't know if it's purposefully or not, but it seems like they play offense with one hand tied behind their back. They just say they say, John, go be Superman, but we're gonna scheme it up for you where for whatever reason you don't ever actually see anything because you're like Superman but blind. So there's guys running wide open, but John Mateer doesn't see them. And then he just runs into the line of scrimmage and gets pulverized. And then on, you know, on every third play, he might make an awesome play to kind of escape them and get him a first down. Cause Oklahoma can't really run the ball either. They have in one game really all season. So I don't know, you know, this is, you know, irresistible force meets a movable object sort of deal where neither one of them can do something. And so the deciding factor there is that Alabama has Ty Simpson, and you got Ty Simpson, and you know, he was rattled a little bit against LSU, and yet when he needed to make the throws, he made them. So I think push comes to shove, I would still expect Alabama to get it done. But that Oklahoma defense, Venables has got those guys, you know, playing fast, playing aggressive. They have kept them in most every game this season, and that's why, you know, as of this weekend, they are still in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, and you know, I asked someone this earlier. I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts. What do you think is the worst matchup for Texas A&M in a hypothetical SEC championship? Would it be Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, or even potentially a repeat of facing Texas? I think those are the only realistic options right now.
I would probably say I mean, I think push comes to shove. What was the answer that your other guest gave you?
He said Georgia. He thought.
He said Georgia. Okay, I was gonna. I would say Alabama only because I think that if you're choosing today, most would still choose Ty Simpson over Gunnar Stockton. Now, I you know, for as much as people have talked about Ryan Williams and these guys at Alabama, you know, the playmakers at Alabama, I think Georgia's receiving core, when you add in the tight ends there, you know, whether it's the freshman Elias Williams, obviously Oscar Delp's been making plays, Lawson Lucky, and then you add in Zachariah Branch and Noah Thomas and the Humphreys kid from Vanderbilt, they arguably have, because A&M's secondary, I think, is the weakness. Ricks is really good at corner. But I think if A&M's defense has a little bit of a, you know, Achilles heel, I do think it's the secondary a little bit. They have not been overly tested because of their schedule. You know, people have dissected, oh, they've played all these, you know, teams that have fired coaches. Yes, they've also played, you know, a bunch of bad quarterbacks. And, you know, Talen Green was the only, was the guy that was able to kind of do some stuff. And so I think when you have the either quarterback, whether it's Ty Simpson, whether it's, you know, Gunner, I think both of those offenses would be capable of at least pressing A&M unlike they've been pressed all season.
Mm-hmm. And then one team I haven't even talked about, I can't believe, you know, this is probably their best team ever, Vanderbilt. Any shot, I hope it doesn't happen. I'm rooting for them. I don't care where I went to school. 10-2, I think they have to make the playoff. Is there any scenario where you think they get left out?
I do think there are some scenarios, depending on the problem is that not all 10-2s are going to be equal. If a bunch of teams finish at 10-2, people are going to look at Vanderbilt's resume and they're going to say it wasn't as hard, as some of the other SEC teams that may finish, you know, in that 10-2 slot. And so then it's a question of how many, you know, Big Ten teams get in. I think, you know, if a Michigan ends up 10, if Michigan upsets Ohio State again and they go 10-2, Vanderbilt's not going to be able to leapfrog, you know, a Michigan, even though Michigan lost to, you know, what maybe is like a 9-3 Oklahoma. Vanderbilt may even have to contend with like a 9-3 Oklahoma. you know, if Oklahoma beats an Alabama but then loses to LSU or whatever to end the regular season, that's going to be a real conversation. So, like you, I'm rooting for it. I think it's been a remarkable story. You know, 1915, the last time they had a team this good. It just, you know, that unfathomable. And it's not, you know, it's the Diego Pavia show, 500 yards against Auburn. But it's that whole, you know, Los Cruces Mafia. That's what I call it. You know, it's that whole gang from New Mexico that, you know, that they brought in, that it's, you know, it's Pavia, it's the OC, it's Jerry Kill, you know, it's the wide receivers coach. It's just that they Clark Lea, credit to him. I mean, this is a guy that I've done a bunch of one-on-ones with coaches and sat down with these guys and written features. I wrote a big feature on him I think it was 3 years ago at On Three, when he was super adamant about being anti-transfer portal. And we're going to, you know, this is when he had been lampooned for saying, you know, we can win a championship at Vanderbilt. And he was steadfast in this belief that he had to, like, you know, build it, not the Rudy way, but build it these, like, you know, with just these guys that were going to be bought in for 4 years and you know, they're going to live and die and sweat Vanderbilt blood. And then he started losing a bunch of games. And credit to him that he said, what I'm doing isn't working. What me and Barton Simmons and these guys that have all been really praised this year, and for good reason, I believe, but they've been, I think they should be praised because they decided, hey, we're not stubborn enough not to pivot. Billy Napier, Hugh Freeze, all these guys that got fired for being too stubborn because they just dug their heels in. Clark Lea said, I need to change, does a complete 180, goes in and makes huge transfer portal hauls, obviously headlined by Diego Pavia. We'll see how sustainable it is in the future, because not having Pavia next season, unless he, you know, is going to become what's the guy that's in college for 50 years, that movie, Gene Wilder or whatever, or the Wilder,
Van Wilder,
Van Wilder. Van, well, he's going to become the Van Wilder of college football. Unless he can get another waiver, I think he's going to have to figure out, you know, the next quarterback situation. But credit to Clark for pivoting and recognizing that his philosophy needed a tweak.
Yeah. If you had a vote for SEC coach of the year, would it go to Lea? Would it go to Elko, or maybe Kiffin? I think those are maybe the only three candidates. Or is there someone else in your mind?
Yeah, maybe I'd smash the trophy in half and hand one hand to Clark and the other to Mike.
Okay. All right, Jesse, final question for you. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, man.
You've covered both these teams, so I'm very curious to hear your thoughts. Okay. Florida, Tennessee, in the swamp. Does Tennessee finally beat, I mean, on paper, you say, well, hell yeah, this is an easy one. But you are well aware there's never an easy one when Tennessee faces Florida, particularly in the swamp.
Let me tell you who really needs this one is Mr. Josh Heupel. I was on your show before the 2024 season talking about how Josh really needed to beat Florida. And look, if he loses to this Florida team, Florida looked like they let go of the rope on Saturday. You know, they had the dead cat bounce against a big rival against Georgia. They came up short, painful loss. You know, you blow a lead after rallying there. DJ Lagway is just, you talk about a guy that has just, whether it's injuries, poor coaching, underdeveloped, total loss of confidence. He looks like a shell of the guy that everyone was saying was going to be, you know, the next Heisman Trophy winner in Gainesville. So if Heupel cannot beat this Florida team, you talk about a guy that maybe I think Tennessee fans, and I've defended them, they do not want Josh Heupel to be fired yet. They're not talking about, they want changes to come this offseason. They think some program adjustments need to be made. He's another guy that maybe needs to relinquish some of that play calling duties on game days. He can focus on some of the other in-game management. But there will be some calls, or there will be some hot seat talk in 2026 if Tennessee stumbles down the stretch, including losing to this, you know, just completely moribund Florida team right now.
It's going to get ugly. I'll just say that. All right. Thank you so much, Jesse. Before you go, tell my audience how to follow you and how to read the Substack.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Jesse R.E. Simonton. Jesse R.E. Simonton. And I have a Substack. It's totally free right now. So you can just, you can find that on my Twitter. You can go to Substack. It's Surrender Cobra. So you know that that little motion you see all the fans doing when they're just completely admonished about what their team just did. When Josh Heupel gives up, you know, a touchdown late to Jaden Ball. And Tennessee fans are going crazy because, you know, Florida just took a 1-point lead in the Swamp in 2 weeks. That's the surrender cover. So come check that out. I appreciate you having me on, Mike. It's always fun to chop it up, talk about the SEC. So good time, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I'll put a link in the description to the Substack so all the cousins can find it.
Yes.
I appreciate you. I'll cut it right there.